And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast live from, of all places, Cleveland, Ohio. Why am I in Cleveland, Ohio when the team stinks and there's no game and it's 2 degrees? I'm in Cleveland, Ohio because the Dallas Mavericks have an off day and the one and only Dirk Nowitzki was willing to come on this stupid podcast if I came to Cleveland, Ohio, and we made it happen. Dirk!
How's it going? Thanks for having me, man.
I did not anticipate this level of breaking news would happen ahead of this podcast. Give me Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis are now on your team. First of all, when did you know that this was, you're the franchise player, you're the franchise. You played the Knicks on Wednesday in New York. Everyone's broing it up. Luka and Kristaps are broing up. When did you know something was in the works? Now you can say.
Yeah, no, I've only been made aware of a few days before that. And honestly, there is always around this time, there's a thousand rumors. As you know, it's your business. So honestly, I wasn't really worried about it. I thought there is no way in heck this is going to happen. And I guess talks were heating up a little bit earlier in that afternoon. And I was like, there's still no way. So I took my nap. Didn't worry about it. Thought there's just no zero chance to make a big blockbuster deal like that. And then I actually set my alarm for about 4:15, and I missed the whole thing. By the time I woke up, I had a million texts, and the deal was basically done. So I was in shock that it actually happened like that, and obviously that trade like that of that magnitude went through, and so I was I was obviously surprised.
So, but did at MSG at Knicks game, there was already sort of rumblings from.
There was rumblings, but I didn't take him serious, and you know, so there was to me, there was just no way in heck this was actually going to happen. I didn't really worry about it, and you know, I just basically said hi to Kristaps. It wasn't like I went up to him and was like, "Hey, we're going to get you in a couple days." No, I just said hi and asked him about his knee and. I didn't really get a chance to talk to him much more than that.
What do you think?
Well, you know, like I said last night, I think if you have a chance to add a young player with you know, franchise caliber player, if you have a chance to add one, you got to do it. You know, he's obviously coming off a serious injury, but the kid's 23 years old. I think that the sky is still the limit. He's a hard worker and. Hopefully his knee is great, and then he will have a lot of fun. So I think that was a no-brainer. It always hurts to give up some people. I think Dennis Smith has got a great future in our league. And obviously Wes has been a warrior. DeAndre was great for us this year. And, you know, you basically lose two first-round picks, which is a lot nowadays. First-rounders are hard to come by, but... You know, we got some players in the deal, and we obviously love what Porzingis and Luka can bring together, hopefully, and it's going to be a lot of fun for Mavs fans for a long, long time.
Is it cool for you the symmetry of you're the greatest international player ever, and now they're rebuilding around these two other European guys who, you know, came with that kind of pedigree, probably idolized you growing up? There's got to be something cool about that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sweet, and it shows how far the game has gone. And, you know, there's, I don't think there were a lot of franchise international players back in the days. And, you know, I've been in the league now for two decades, and how the league has gone global. And, you know, now players from all over are in this world, in this league. And not only having our players, but have been franchise players and big impact players and on their teams and in their communities. And so it's been the last two decades have been fun to watch.
So I'll tell you what, one of the things I thought about when this trade happened, you're right. Two first round picks is a lot, taking out some salary. I thought back to 2011 and even before that, if you look at what you guys have done in the last 15 years, the draft, traded a lot of draft picks. A lot of picks didn't work out. Free agency, we don't need to go in. Free agency, you got good players, but you didn't get the ones that you wanted. It's almost like the Mavs look at the last 15 years like, look, draft didn't work. Free agency didn't work. We got to go get a guy and we'll figure out the rest later. Like with these picks, we don't use these picks anyway. Cap space hasn't gotten us the A-plus guy that we wanted. And it just reminded me of how that the championship team was not brought back and the pain of that. Have you watched Shark Tank yet? by the way? You vowed never to watch it.
I watched a few minutes here and there, but I've never actually sat down and watched an entire episode. But you're right. I think we've made some great trades over my tenure here over the last two decades. I agree with some of free agency and some of the draft. It's been a little hit and miss and a little unfortunate at times that things didn't work out. But I think Donnie and Mark have shown great record of making big time trades that put us in position to win, starting way back when, you know, when we did a huge blockbuster with Washington to get Juwan Howard back in the days where we traded like 8 or 9 people.
You guys had some real.
And we got Van Exelen. I mean, we've got some good stuff over the years, over the last 20 years, and our trade record is pretty good.
You know, speaking of Juwan Howard, you brought Juwan Howard up. Big mistake. I've been told to ask about going to Juwan Howard's birthday party, which is apparently over All-Star. Could you share this story, please?
Well, you know.
This is the young days of Dirk and Nash and Cubes all living up in the NBA.
Yeah, those days, you know, we basically had a lot of fun around the All-Star games, you know. We used that little break to enjoy and get away a little bit and also party. I mean, we were all young and in our 20s and ready to rumble. So there were a couple of great nights, including Cubes hanging out of a limo, you know, whether he was getting fresh air or doing something else, I'm not sure. But, you know, I'll never forget the Philly All-Star game was my first one. And, we were in New York before, so we stayed in New York and then took the train down to Philly for the All-Star game. And there were a couple loose nights,
in Philly.
Atlanta, we had a couple good ones.
What is a couple good? What does that mean? I'm picturing the Hangover, but with famous people. Like you're like, oh, and so-and-so was
there.
Well,
yeah, the good thing is, back then there wasn't all this social media stuff, you know? Not everybody had cameras on the phone yet, and you could just get away with stuff now that you couldn't get away with now. So yeah, there were fun nights, you know, just ending up in random holes, hole in the wall type bars and just having a blast and letting go a little bit and forgetting about the stress of the season. And, that's about as deep as I want to get into it.
Yeah, these are PG-13 to R-rated stories. Cubes hanging out of a limo. One of your former associates told me about that story. When you said he was either getting fresh air or doing something else, I'll just leave it to people's imagination what the doing something else was. It wasn't shouting at bystanders.
No, it wasn't that.
It wasn't shouting at bystanders. Look, first of all, I forgot about ask about this. This should have been my first question. We learned 10 minutes ago you're going to the All-Star game. Congratulations. How many is this for you? It's got to be like 15.
14.
14.
Yeah. I mean, incredible honor.
What's the record?
What's my record?
No, what's the record? Who has the most All-Star? Kareem with like 18 or something crazy like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have no
20?
idea.
20 plus?
I'm getting sure Shaq. Shaq has more. Kobe has more. I don't know. Jordan, I'm sure. But,
Do you want to go?
So I was going anyways since I'm coaching Friday.
Oh, that's right. Coaching, you're the Rising Stars coach. There's so much to talk about.
Coaching Luka. Then I'm in the three-point contest on Saturday, which is great. And that should be fun. There's a lot of great shooters there. And
can I ask you an honest question about the three-point contest?
Yeah, go ahead.
How concerned are you about the minute time length? I feel like if you're over 40, you should get 15 more seconds.
I think so too. But I'm going to be sprinting from rack to rack, trying to make it. I mean, my shot is fairly quick. But the moving in between the racks will be a problem, but I think I can make it.
Like maybe. Clay and you should not have the same amount of time. That's not fair.
Yeah. Maybe once it gets closer, I might actually try it in Dallas just to see what the time is looking like and see how fast I got to shoot and move. But, we'll see. I'll make it fun. I'll make it work.
Do you have any coaching strategies for the Rising Stars game?
You know, what I'm thinking is they're going to give me a real coach on my side, and all I got to do is hang out and enjoy my time and talk to the players, getting to know some of the young stars we have coming up, and really just be there and mingle and enjoy, and I let the coaching up to other guys.
So you're going to play in the All-Star game. They're going to make you play.
Yeah, so Kamish called me this morning about the whole idea, and you know, I was on board. This is an honor. It's humbling that me and D Wade obviously got asked to do this, and so I think it's going to be awesome. I don't think I'm going to play a ton of minutes. Obviously, taking away minutes from somebody who actually deserved it and got voted. So you know, it's just basically saying. Thanks for the last two decades, and I really appreciate it, and I'm humble.
Give us one good one-legger off the backboard. That's what we want to see.
Yeah, I'm going to try to hoist whatever I get, you know, in those few minutes. I'm going to have some fun and, you know, interact with the guys. And obviously, when I'm open, I'm going to let it ride.
Let it fly. No, there's it's the All-Star game.
Yeah.
I told Mike Conley when he came on the podcast, if he ever gets in, and he's just cursed. It's just never going to happen. He should just transform into a ball hug and try to dunk things. Like, he should just play completely crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until, I mean, obviously I realized, but when you say, you know, it's you and D Wade, the symmetry there is fun in a lot of ways too. Obviously that's among 2006 and 2007 are the low points of the Dirk career arc in some ways. Do you have a relationship with Dwayne?
No, not really. I think it was pretty frosty there for a while, especially around the 06 time. And he didn't like some of the stuff I said after the finals, and he said some stuff. But after that, it's been actually pretty smooth. Even in 11, we said hi and, I mean, shook hands and stuff like that. So,
but then they made fun of you having a cold.
Yeah, but I got
which you had a real that you
yeah,
were like
actually,
really
I had,
legit
I
sick.
I had a little fever going, but it's okay. I got over that one pretty quick, and obviously us winning made it all better.
You know who didn't get over that? My wife.
Really?
My wife was like, "That's really mean what they did. They're being really mean. They're like mean high school kids.
Yeah.
I don't like that." She was like, "I'm cheering against Miami though. That's it." She's like, "I always liked Dirk, and now I'm out on LeBron and Wade." She never came all the way back in either.
Really?
She's still kind
of
out.
That is sweet. That's sweet of her. Tell her thank you. No, it's fine. But we've obviously known that we've gone back and forth and competed for a long time in 06 and obviously 11. Were just the peaks, you know, it's the repeat of the finals and stuff. It was, that was amazing how that all worked out. And I'm glad that obviously they got us in 06 and then we were able to win our championship in 11. So I'm glad how that worked out. And, you know, we've been competing together for a long, long time. And I think this is special for both of us.
You're actually not dissimilar in terms of styles. Like you both have, like Dwayne for even when Dwayne was in his prime, he kind of had a little old man feel to his game, like using the backboard, little Euro steppy kind of things. Like you both have like a little, even now he's still doing it. He's kind of fools people with his footwork and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's fun to watch, but he was a little more athletic than I was.
A little more.
You
just got a different kind of athleticism.
He made some incredible plays in his prime, obviously. But yeah, you know, once you lose a little step, you can only make this league if you're still skilled and do other things. And he's obviously that. He can still get to the basket and use his smarts and his pump fakes and his spin moves. And he can still go on the block and score. So he can still score in a thousand different ways.
2007, you win the MVP and lose in the first round. That's the summer of the Australian Outback, right?
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to ask you about that. What's like the day to day on the Australian Outback? It's you and Holger, right?
Yeah.
Are you like in a pickup truck? Are you isolated in the wilderness with like animals and nobody else around you? Like, what is the day to day?
Yeah. So for a few days, what we did was we made Sydney our hub. We had a friend there. And so we always went there, looked at Sydney for a few days. Then we did a little adventure, flew somewhere else. Flew to Ayers Rock, did a couple days outside, slept in a Jeep, like rented this little Jeep, slept outside for a few days, then back to Sydney, wash our clothes, get a little city life back in our lives. And then we did another excursion, went to Grand Barrier Reef for a few days, slept on a ship, back to Sydney. Then we went up to Darwin, where it's beautiful outdoor living. We rented another Jeep, stayed there for a few days. So we always kind of hopped around, but always made Sydney our hub. But overall, we were almost on the road for 5 to 6 weeks. Me and this old man, it was obviously weird, but I just wanted to get away as far as I could. I was proud of the season, but I was embarrassed about the playoffs and how, and, you know, got the MVP, and it was the first, at the time, it was the first one seed losing to the eighth seed, and I didn't play well in that playoff run, and so I just wanted to get away as far as I could, and it was really refreshing, back to the roots type, a little outdoorsy, so that was great, and then actually that summer I played national team and got focused again, but I needed a few weeks to get away.
So
Holger was like, you know, when you sleep outside in those little Jeeps, you can just open that door and there's a little grill in there. And so literally we're standing there and it's 6 o'clock. It gets dark really early. So, cause it was getting in the winter there in Australia. So Holger and I are standing, we go grocery shopping and like pack the Jeep full for like 3-4 days. And then we did the outback and outdoorsy life. And we're standing there at this little grill and put some steaks and some freaking baguettes or whatever.
You ate snakes?
Yeah, we put a little steaks on the grill.
Oh, steak. I think you said snake.
Oh, no. Snakes were there around us.
Okay.
They actually warned us at night when you go to the bathroom to be careful and take a little light or whatever and make sure.
That is an ominous warning.
Yeah, make sure you don't step on anything you don't want to step on. But, no, we're grilling steaks and it was outdoor living.
So, like, 5 weeks, no basketball, right? Do you exercise?
I did exercise a little bit, and then once I was in Sydney, that we did have a gym that we went to a couple times. So, plus at that day, you know, I was still younger. You get back in shape pretty quick.
That.
You know, as I'm older here, while I was over 30, I mean, I couldn't even take 2 weeks off to feel the effect. So, I kind of kept training through. But back in the days, you know, you would take a few weeks off, and it takes you 2 weeks to kind of get back in shape. So, yeah, I worked out a little bit, but not as much as I probably should have.
When I don't remember what game it was, but it might have been the last game of the Warriors series. At some point, you throw a chair into the wall at Oracle Arena, which they have kept now. I believe they have like a – it's marked, so I can't remember.
It's my shrine, yeah.
It's your shrine. There was a hole. They plastered over it, and it's like Dirk was here. Enraged Dirk was here. I've been told that they are going to somehow try to duplicate this or take this to the Chase Center. I'm not sure how that would work. Have you been consulted on this? Because they should do that.
I haven't been consulted, but I heard the same rumor. And obviously, it would be an honor if they make me part of the new stadium. And yeah, I mean, they're proud of that, you know, being the eighth seed. And that was a big moment for them. And the sort of the shirts hanging there framed.
That's right.
And then they did the hole, they put a little plastic thing, like a plexic thing in front of it, and I signed it. And then a few years after that, I got asked, like, you know, so now you're laughing about this or whatever, but at the end of the day, I signed it because it's part of my history. It's part of my career, and I mean, why not take it and run with it? And, you know, maybe if I don't go through it with 07, maybe I'm never the champion 11. I think all those disappointments helped me grow into the leader and the winner that I became later on. So it's not making light of the situation that I lost in 07. I'm still bitter about it. Don't get me wrong. That was tough. I think that was our year. But at the end of the day, it happened. It made me the player that I am. So I kind of got to embrace it.
With Metro, listeners, by T-Mobile, you can catch all the action on and off the court. You can also count on coast-to-coast coverage with Metro because you'll be on the network that covers 99% of people in the U.S. That's almost all the people, just like AT&T and Verizon. So with Metro, you can follow the game pretty much anywhere. Follow the game you love. Don't miss a dunk with Metro. Coverage may vary, so stop by your nearest Metro for details. Now is the time. Switch to Metro and get on a big network with big savings. Metro by T-Mobile, that's genius. We're going to bounce around the career of Dirk. You've obviously talked about this a lot, but the 2011 championship run will be the defining moment of your career. That playoff run had a lot of pivot points. Like that whole season, you guys, and I remember writing this for Sports Illustrated at the time, were sort of like the contender that was lurking there that nobody was talking about. And then you got hurt in the middle of the season. The team kind of lost a lot of games, and Caron got hurt right at the end of the season, and kind of people forgot about the Mavs. So we're going to go series for series. Game two of the finals. You've lost game one.
So you're starting the finals?
We're starting the finals. That's the most interesting one. You're down 15 or whatever in the fourth quarter. Dwayne makes a three and is talking trash to your bench. You've talked about this. Jet have talked about this. This huddle in the timeout where you all gather yourselves and Jet says something and you say something. But, did you believe you could still win the game? Like, in your heart, did you actually believe you could win the game?
Not really at that point. For some reason, we were never really in the first, basically almost two games, we were never really getting any track offensively. They were really athletic. They took some of our shooters out of the game, but just running, you know, Pager could barely play in that series because they were just so athletic on the wing and getting to our shooters. So we couldn't really get anything going offensively. So I wasn't sure if we could get, create enough momentum offensively to get back into this. But, you know, we just, we got going on the defensive end and got some great stops. Even when they got some second chance opportunities, we got a little lucky and had some runouts. Jet had a big shot. I think they double teamed me once. Jay Kidd hit a big three and somehow we climbed back into this and stole game two. But, honestly, that might only happen 1 out of 10 times, you know, against a team like that. That was a little fortunate, but also a great way to steal it and really get back in the series. If we lose that game, I think there's the chance are pretty slim that we're coming back to beat that team. So, yeah, that was probably the biggest game of the series.
What's the locker room like after game? I don't know if you remember a conversation or a scene or like the shock of it. I don't know what you remember of the locker room.
Yeah, nothing really. I mean, I always see the scene where I'm standing there, everybody coming up to me after the game, right after the buzzer, after Wade hit, missed the half court shot. And I'm just literally standing there. I'm just staring like I'm completely out of it. It's so bizarre. And people have asked me before what I'm thinking there and I can't even remember. I was literally just standing there in a stare and people are pounding me on the chest and say, yeah, way to go. And I can't remember a single thing, what even took place there. And I did an interview and then just kind of walked off. And I can't remember what happened.
I don't know. Those interviews must be like, you don't even, like, I would just finish it and be like, I hope I didn't say anything crazy.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, obviously I love Doris, but I can't even remember what I said there, but that was a huge turning point. For us in this year to actually arrived in the finals. For us, it was kind of like, hey, we're here now because the first game was kind of went by. We had no shot and they dominated game two all the way till the end. So it was kind of like, hey, we're here and we actually have a shot at this.
Game six, you go to Miami up 3-2. I believe you did the dress, the pack one suit thing or pack one, whatever that Riles used to do. Sometimes you can feel a finals turn. Like, I'll never forget when the Spurs went up 2-1 over Miami the second time. I was in the press room with David Thorpe and we were both saying, it's over. Like, they figured out it's over. Like, Miami has no chance to come back in this series. Did it feel like that to you when you were up 3-2? Did you guys go to Miami being like, if we play well, we have this?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I mean, you can never know against a team that's stacked like that with basically three Hall of Famers and a bunch of other great players. So I wasn't quite sure. We were hoping that, with us coming back in game four and then, you know, game five grinding out at the end and Jet making that big three on the wing, to go up there 3-2. But, you know, what I went through in 06, I mean, we were up 2-0. We already had the parade planned.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we lose four straight. So I wasn't getting carried away at all. I knew this was going to be extremely hard to close on somebody else's court. It's always hard to close a series. So, I don't think I thought we had this. I thought we're going to have to play, our best basketball to close it out. And it's actually the funny thing. I was terrible in the first half.
I know you were one of 12 or something like that.
I was forcing things. I tried to get going so bad to help the team win this. And it was better for me to stay out of the way. The guys played great. Jet was amazing. Injecting JJ, actually, believe it or not, in the starting lineup was a changing thing for us from starting after game three.
Starting JJ.
And then we brought Deshaun off the bench. That was a huge changing point for us in the series. So, I'll never forget This one, actually, I do remember. Cardinal, at halftime, we're still up off game six, and I'm obviously depressed. I was like, what am I doing? I can't buy one. And Cardinal, you know, he's a fool, as I'm sure you know. So he comes off, and he's like, yes! He's got both fists pumped in the air. And I was like, what does he want right now? And he's like, you are terrible, and we're still winning. You know, you make a few, and we got this. So he was all fired up. So he had me laughing there at halftime. And then I kind of relaxed a little bit, and we were able to really pull it out. I made a few shots in the second half. But I got to say, the team actually won that one. You know, I wasn't at my best against Portland the first round. And I wasn't at my best, I think, in the finals. I was at my best in the OKC.
The OKC series. You
OKC and
up,
LA. Woo. I thought I played my best series, those two, in of that 11 run. And I thought that the team was phenomenal against Portland and Miami.
Obviously, the iconic image that everyone is going to always remember from that series is you walking off the floor when the game is ending and going to the locker room. And needing to gather yourself. That story's been told. It was told. Ian Thompson told it beautifully in his new book, The Soul of Basketball, which Scott was interviewed. Scott Tomlin, your PR guy's here, was interviewed for. I don't care that you've told the story before. It's incredible. I mean, you just needed time, right? And you just, I mean, I'm trying to picture the visiting locker room in Miami. You literally just laid down on a bench. Or went in the shower. I can't remember the order.
Yeah,
of the bench.
So the shower there has a little bench there, and I just went there. And you know, it started with 08 when we made it to Olympics. The first time I made my dream happen, and I was standing on the court, and we made it. We beat Puerto Rico in the final game, and we go into the Olympics, and I feel these tears coming on, and I'm just, it'll be fine. And next thing you know, I'm on the court sobbing. My teammates are hugging me, and I couldn't control it at all for like the next 15 minutes. So fast forward, the game's almost over. I had that last layup, and then
lefty
on a cut, which I never do. I'm not a great cutter, obviously. So you know, I just feel that same feeling coming on, and I was like, I don't want to stand here and sob and hug my teammates. So let me just get out of the way and regroup for a couple minutes, and then you know, I'll come back out. And I rushed off the court and laid there on that bench by the shower. And Scott, my guy, Tim Frank chased me. Those two came back there, and Tim was like, hey, you got to come back out. And I was like, you know, just give the trophy to somebody else. I don't need it. I want to regroup. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go through your mind at that moment. But they were like, no, both, you got to come back out.
It's hard to remember, but like, what is going through your mind? Are you thinking of your family? Are you thinking of 07? Are you just thinking all of like a million things at once?
A little bit of everything. All the hard work and, you know, the frustrations you go through to get there. And, you know, the people that went through the tough times with you to support you, your family, your friends. So it's been, it was a million things. And I couldn't really control it for a couple minutes, but at that point, actually, it was a lot better than when I made it to Olympics. Maybe because I was a few years older, maybe I wasn't as exhausted. I can't remember, but I was able to come back out, and then it was fine. I was able to enjoy it, and obviously now I love the picture with the trophy. When I get the trophy and I have it over my head, and the whole team is behind me, that's a beautiful shot that now I have in my house. Yeah. But if it was up to me, I would have probably missed that shot.
Yeah, Brian Cardinals holding the finals MVP
trophy.
Yeah,
maybe Brian or maybe Jay Kidd would have probably taken it, but that was now it's. I'm glad I came back.
Jan Mahinmi hit his jump shot in Game 6, right? That was Game 6. That was what I knew they were going to win. Like when Jan Mahinmi's hitting buzzer-beating jump shots.
So this was actually, I think, at the end of the third. Jan didn't play much that year because, you know, we had Haywood. Brandon as a backup after Tyson and Brandon, I think Brendan, he liked to say, I always call him Brandon just to mess with him, but it's actually Brendan. He strained his hip flexor in the finals, and he didn't go that game. So we threw Jan in there. He was an unbelievable professional and always worked hard, and he deserved that chance at that moment. And yeah, when I think Chet had the ball, it kind of trapped him, and he dumped it off to Jan, and he just stepped right in and made it. And I think that's where our team realized too. This might be our night and our series, and we kind of rolled from there.
Couple more quick 2011 ones. Game 4 in Portland is another flashbulb NBA memory for a lot of people. It's the Brandon Roy game where Brandon Roy scores like 20, whatever, in the fourth quarter. They come back and win. And all the whispers come back. The Mavs are soft. The Mavs are underdogs now in this series. The Mavs don't have the DNA to do this. What are you guys feeling in the locker room? Do you guys question yourselves, or are you so good by that point as a team that you're like, we have home court, we're all right? Or do you begin to think, boy, we just crumbled in that game?
Yeah, that was a tough one. We had that game in our hands and kind of gave it away. But credit to Brandon Roy. He was incredible.
Incredible game. Incredible NBA moment.
Shots from everywhere. And that was also fun to watch. But we were really frustrated. But coming back home, I think we had already gathered ourselves again. And I remember I was telling the team, I don't think they can beat us on our home court if we play well and play together. And I think we got enough weapons to defend them. We didn't think at the time that Brandon Roy could do that consistently a couple more times to beat us. We felt like, you know, with Tyson on LaMarcus, we had a decent matchup there. Even though LaMarcus is still obviously a great scorer and a great player, but we felt like Tyson had a shot to guard him, and we can still trap him some. So I told the team, I don't think they can beat us on our home court. And so in game 5, we had to come out and obviously set the tone. And, I think that's what we did. It was a great team effort and, found a way to win. And then actually game 6 was more of the same.
I don't remember game 6.
They were up first. They came up hitting, swinging. And by halftime, we had already caught up. And then we ran away a little bit, made a huge run in the third, and we were up big again, almost like 15, I want to say. But then they made it a game again. They made it close. They almost stole their game again, and we had to grind it all the way to the end. And then they had to foul a couple, and then I made a couple free throws in the end to kind of seal it. But, yeah, game 6 was almost the same thing happening as in,
I don't remember that. I have no memory of that. Scott's got a very important job right now, by the way, which is if anyone gets traded during this podcast, you have to alert me to that fact.
Yeah, no, he's.
Please do. The Lakers series that came next, everybody forgets, because it ended up being a sweep and they completely unraveled by the end of it. That's when Bynum almost kills JJ, literally almost murders him on the floor. And it was a sweep. More people picked the Lakers to win that series than to pick you. And I believe it was game 1 had a really crazy ending where you guys came back and like Jay Kidd stole an inbounds pass. Just like a lot of crazy things happened. And it was like, oh, okay, Mavs got game 1. This is going to be a series. Did you go in thinking we're better than this team? Or what was the approach? They're the defending champs,
yeah,
you know?
No, no way. I don't think we thought we were better. We kind of went in there saying, hey, we're the underdog. Let's see what we can do, if we can have some fun and see if we can actually maybe steal a game and maybe scare them a bit, I think. But we never thought we got this. But game 1 started off like everybody thought. Kobe was on fire. They ran away. I think at the beginning of the third, they were already up 20. And we injected actually Corey Brewer.
That's right. That's the Corey Brewer game.
That's the only time he played, I think, that the whole playoff run. And he is running around like a madman, like he still does.
Still
does almost 10 years later. And he changed the game for us. Defensively, had a couple deflections. He hit a 3 in a corner. I don't know how he did it, but he did. And somehow we crawled back into this game. But, you know, Kobe is obviously still Kobe. He was making shots from all over the floor. And somehow we take the lead down the stretch. And they run one more play. And I don't know if we mess it up or Kobe comes up to the top and it sort of has a great look. And it's one of those great looks where you say, 10 out of 10, he's making that. And especially that day, he must have had 40. I can't even remember. But I thought for sure it was going in from where I was at. And it happened to go long. And it was straight on line, but it was a little long. And it bounced out. And we stole that game. So I think that gave us a lot of confidence. Hey, we didn't play well. We didn't play well at all. We stole the game. And game 2, it was sort of free. It was a free shot. You know, let's play, see if we can scare him a little more and have some fun. And I got to say that the team was great. I thought JJ really, they couldn't guard his high screen and roll in that game. We always called a bind him up or whoever. And he played a great game in that game. I remember all the bench was making shots. And then we were up two. That was incredible. And then coming home, we knew we were going to get their best shot. And if we can withstand that, then we're through the worst. And they threw a great game at us. And I think we happened to steal that one.
Then they started Odom in game four. I believe they went like super big and started Odom.
No, I think what happened didn't Meta World Peace got ejected at the end of game two when he ran into JJ. So he was actually suspended for game three. So that meant Lamar played more in game three. So they started, I think they started big that series, that game in game three. I think that's how that went down. And then, they threw a great game at us. And I remember at the end, we made some threes. Pedro hit a big shot. And we were able to steal that one. And then, basically then we broke their will a little bit. And in game four was a blowout. We were making shots. I think Pedro was 6-for-6 and Jet was 9-for-10.
It's amazing
from three,
how everyone, you needed everyone on the team at some point during that run.
Yeah.
Everyone had a moment.
That was an incredible team. I say it all the time. We had really no egos, on the team. We just wanted to win together. We had a bunch of veterans. And we truly loved each other and had fun playing with each other. And we kind of sort of rallied around Karan, even though he didn't play. But to see how he attacked that rehab, you know, he tore his patella tendon around New Year's. But he wanted to play so bad in those playoffs and the way he fought every day. And that really showed us how we have to fight and for him. And that was also a big part we rallied around.
To think this all started with you not wanting to come to the NBA in 1998 or 1999. You wanted to stay a little bit longer in Germany. And I believe the story is you rooted for the lockout to last the whole season, right? Your rookie year?
Yeah, I was comfortable, obviously, at home. I hadn't signed my contract yet because there was a lockout right from July 1. So I was able to be at home. I played first division in my hometown. Things were going good. We were playing well. And so I think there was a comfort level there, you know, not leaving right in the middle of the season and starting something new. But sure enough, somewhere in early January, they said, I just read somewhere, season saved. And I was super anxious, super worried. And then literally that day we got the call from Donnie and Nelly, and they were like, yeah, you got to come over, and I'm going to have a short training camp of like a week or 10 days at max. And then we're going into a 50 game season. So that whole season was a blur. I mean, we had the back to back to backs. I was a little worried, and you know, it wasn't a great year for me. But looking back now, it was actually great to get my feet wet, you know, come over and see the surrounding, get used to everything, and then come back for a full second year. Played summer league that summer, and it just had a lot more.
I can't believe you played summer league that summer. It just doesn't seem plausible that Dirk Nowitzki played summer league after his rookie year.
And then I played again after my second year. I played two summer
leagues. That's not a real thing. That didn't happen. So, that happened?
Yeah, that happened.
Were you the MVP? did you graduate after like one game?
No, back in the days, we still played in Long Beach and then went to Utah. So it was like a whole month we were on the road. So I did that after my second year, where I was already sort of established, just because I missed before my rookie season. I missed that one, so they wanted me to play twice, and I said it's fine. So I usually played all that summer through anyways. I played national team, and then I went right into summer league. The first year going through it was tough. I mean, there was games where I didn't play at all, didn't know all the plays and the defensive coverages at times, because there was just so much happening at once. But looking back now, it was an important year for me to just get used to everything and set me up to be good in the second year. And I always tell this story. My second year, I was a little fortunate. We had a power forward named Gary Trent, and he played really well there for us in my rookie year. And coming to my second year, he tore his hamstring. So he was going to be out my entire second year. And Nelly was like, okay, we don't really think you can guard any power forwards. But I think you'll be great at power forward because I played some small forward in my rookie season. We actually started bigger, and they saw my future more as a small forward because I was skinny. So then we were really out of power forward. So Nelly was like, listen, if they post you up, you just fight like crazy and get around them and just front them. And when they throw the ball over, we send Sean Bradley over and let his length be a factor. And that's how we kind of got away with it my second and third year, just being a little – you know, not as physical, being skinny, and not here really having any post defense. I just always got away with fronting everybody. I tried, like, when they crossed half court, I was always trying to already fight them in front of them so they wouldn't have to post me up. So that's how we made it work on the defensive end, and it obviously worked great on the offensive end. I was able to pull some of those fours out away from the basket, and that's where you know, the shooting four kind of thing was worked.
So speaking of sort of tough early days, I was texting with Steve Nash about, you know, what should I ask Dirk? What are some of your memories of Dirk that are not R-rated? You know, what are some memories of Dirk? And I'll read you what he said. One of the things he said. He said, ask him about the early days in Dallas at the Landry Center. It was our practice court in a medical center. He and I would go twice a day shooting, playing one-on-one and some horse. We were going through some dark times as we both struggled, but we kept pushing each other to go back, and it turns out that it was transformative for us, especially mentally. And then we were texting more, and he said, it really was an important time. We doubled down instead of folding. What do you remember about these sessions with Steve in the Landry Center?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I feel like we went back almost every off day. We went back again at night to work and, you know, just push each other to get better. And, you know, he was struggling a bit with his back. And I was struggling with playing time. And, you know, it was us trying to get better. And also we had a great friendship. So we were pushing each other on and off the floor. And, you know, I always tell this story too. Landry Center was an open, gym, you know. So at night, sometimes when we went back on our court, there were runs going on. There were leagues going on in the evening. So me and Nash would show up and there was a full court 5-on-5 game. So we're like, what are we doing? So Nash and I would shoot on the middle hoop from the baselines only to begin with. And then when they had a short break, we would run out on the main court, get a few jimmies up, and then pass and play some horse. And then when the run continued, we'd go back on the side court. I mean, it was like something you could never imagine anymore now. Everybody obviously has their own practice facility. But back then, it was just an open thing for everybody to use. So but those were the good old days. We were there almost every night with Kiki Vandeweghe at the time, who was our development coach. He was there night and day, and we did so much together. And those days really set us up to make it.
Would you guys talk about sort of adjusting to the NBA and how it wasn't going as well as you had hoped, or was it more unsaid, like we're just working?
Yeah, we're just working. I think what helped me was Steve already been in the league a couple of years. He was in Phoenix for two. So he kind of knew how this whole thing worked. He knew the NBA business. And then Finn, you know, who was our best player at the time, our all-star, he was a great friend of Steve. And so they kind of took me under their wing. So they both kind of already knew how the NBA circus works. And, you know, they just, you know, they helped me out on and off the floor. And we were just grinding, trying to get better and having fun and competing against each other at night and playing one-on-one on the block or on the outside or shooting contests and just always competing and trying to get better.
What do you do for a horse shot? What does Dirk Nowitzki do when he's trying to win horse? Half court? I don't know what you do.
This was actually not a dumb horse where you just shoot behind the back. This was horse with real shots. So we would do block work, shoot turnarounds. And then in between the shot, we would run. So you would run to one position, you would shoot a normal shot, and then the other guy had to run and follow the same shot. And then if the guy misses, then it's the other guy's turn. But we'd always go move and shoot real shots and not make fun shots. So shoot over the backboard. This is actually working on your game with movement and a little competition, because obviously the guy has to make the shot that you make. So we were playing. We call it horse, but it's not really horse, right? What you think.
How many points are you behind Will Chamberlain right now? Do you know?
Not quite. You know, going into season, there was almost 300. I'm not sure where I'm at now, but it's been a frustrating year, I got to say. You know, I think I was doing well after the foot surgery. I like how you jumped there, by the way. That was a good one.
I'm just bouncing around. Cause okay, we're getting towards the end. So I just got stuff I got to get in.
Keep them coming. And I was doing well there in August, September. And then I was already scrimmaging with the guys, every day and things were going fine. And then, this one tendon in my foot just got inflamed and, had to almost sit out 6-7 weeks right around training camp. And that just threw me completely off. Now I had to fight back in the middle of the season, which was extremely hard to somehow still compete in this league with guys who are, you know, half my age. So it's been frustrating times, I gotta say, especially there when I came back in December and you want to do something and your body can't really respond and you're a little out of shape. And it's been hard, but I think the last few weeks I've made some strides and it's been a little more enjoyable, I gotta say. But the season overall has been frustrating, but I'm hoping still, you know, to get better, and we still have, like, I don't know, 30 something games left where I can still get better and hopefully catch Wild. I mean, that'll be awesome.
I was going to say, do you care? And it sounds like, I mean, I would care if it were me. I would care.
I mean, if you're this close, how much?
About
150
points.
About 150.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, if you're this close, why not? Right. Why not go for it? I mean, if I was, I don't know, 1,000 away, then I always said it doesn't make sense for me to keep going just to move up some spots in some random category. So if it's within reach and it's possible, it's fun, and we're all enjoying it, then sure, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try. But like I said, that's not why I came back this season. I felt like this after surgery, my ankle's going to be good and, I can actually still play a good year, but it's been frustrating.
I don't have the Wi-Fi here because we're at your hotel. I didn't log into the Wi-Fi. You must be career not far from 50, 40, 90 shooting. It's got to be close. Like I would guess like 47, 39. You got to be 90's got to be close, right? 88 or something?
Yeah, I think that's the closest. Fortunately, I had some rougher years the last 2 years shooting-wise. And I think early in my career, I was chucking some shots under Nelly that were not great shots at times. I think my most efficient years was there with Avery when he made me play a great team game and less threes, more efficient. And then obviously under Rick around those championship years, but before and after, there were some rough years where I missed some shots, but I think it's only really about 45, 46 from the field, and the threes, you know, the last 2 years have brought it down too, or this year at least. So, I'm not sure. I think Steve is a lot closer than I am at the 50, 40, 90. I mean, he's not talked about as much as one of the greatest shooters of all times, but I think his stats show that he is.
Before Curry, you could argue he was the greatest shooter of all time. Curry has just redefined what is possible. I mean, it's just insane what he does.
Yeah.
He was 10 of 18 from three last night, and you just, like, you scan the box score, and you're like, oh, 10 of 18, it's normal. That's, like, not normal. That's not a normal thing.
Yeah, we played him a few weeks ago in Dallas, and I look up, he had 50.
Oh, he
50.
Had a crazy game.
He had 50, but it didn't even seem like he had 50. He wasn't, like, crazy chucking at all times. He made everything throw up. When you run at him, he drove, he hit floaters, he got some layups and some back cuts, and he look up, and he obviously hits, oh, he always hits his threes. So he had 50, or almost 50. I mean, he's incredible. What a score. I mean, so much fun to watch.
You won't say that you're retiring. Maybe do you not, I don't know even how to phrase the question. I want you to say it. You don't want the fanfare. That's my guess.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, want to be low key about it, and you know, just wanted to see how this season went health wise, which hasn't been great. So I think that's going to help the decision sooner or later. But yeah, I kind of wanted to see how everything goes. Like last year, for example, they already asked me, and I almost played 80 games. The body was okay, and it held up. And so I kind of wanted to see how this season went, and talk to my family about it, and then make the decision then. But yeah, I mean, the way it's going now, I'm obviously leaning towards it, but we'll see how the last 30 something games.
It's strange because everyone assumes it, including people around the Mavericks. And then you just read the tweets like, oh, Dirk has X amount of points in his last game at Madison Square Garden. I'm like, this is so weird. He's actually not said this. Everyone is just assuming it, but it's the only time I can remember where people are posting like last this and that. Like in Boston, they're cheering for you to score the all-time. What did you need? One more point? Two more points to be the all-time visiting scorer?
A visiting scorer for a Western Conference team.
A Western Conference team.
Yeah, I needed one basket. And, oh, man, it was frustrating, man. I had two shots in the first half that were pretty good looks. Didn't make one. So then there in the second half, we had a bad run. I missed a few wide open looks. And then at the end, the whole arena was, we want Dirk. So he actually subbed me back in with like 2 minutes to go and the game was sort of over. Boston had made a run and the game was kind of out of reach. So then every time they're feeding me the ball, I shoot a three. I had a post up, had another mid range and I just couldn't get anything going. But you know, the fans wanted it so bad. And so I'm forcing shots and they're not really good shots. I didn't have a great rhythm. So, but I wanted it obviously really bad and it just didn't happen. So I go 0 for 10 that night, you know, and it was super special, their reception there, how they, you know, they have standing ovations and I wanted it so badly to happen to make at least one basket and it just couldn't happen. So I think afterwards I was super thrilled and something I'll never forget, but I was also super frustrated. Like you couldn't make 1 out of 10 shots. What are you doing?
Who's the record? Kobe?
Kobe had one more point than me, so I just needed one basket to go in.
You
so
can check the schedule next year, and if like one of the first five games is at Boston, you can retire after like game six if you really care that much.
Yeah, I don't think I do that much. You know, honestly, if I decide to call it a day, I won't touch a basket for a while. I'm going to be drinking wine every night somewhere and having fun and enjoying family life and. So that's not something I'll
Steve told me to ask, what does Dirk want to do in 5 years?
Well, 5 years, I don't know. But for the near future is getting away a little bit, enjoying my kids, traveling the world was something we try in the summer, but you're always limited. I always got to work out, always got to find gyms. So I want to get it completely away and take a year and travel with the family whenever I want and see my family all over the world. And then, I don't know, I think I'll have plenty of opportunities in a few years to do some stuff. I'm going to keep doing good stuff with my foundation and charity work. And I have one in Germany, I have one here, and obviously in the U.S. in Dallas. So we're going to keep doing stuff there. But some day-to-day stuff, I'm sure we'll find something. Whether I'll go back with the Mavs, I'm sure would love to have me in some capacity. But all that is
if
is
only
really
for
not
the
there.
Scoreboard videos. If only for that. The hump day one where you're the camel, but it's game day is just an all-timer. That commercial is back on now. The actual hump day one with the camel at Geico has cycled back on. And every time I see it, like, did you train for that? You got the camel's mannerisms and his, and like this, the rhythm of his voice with their practice runs.
No,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, I did love that commercial that came out. So when they brought me that idea of me doing it, I was all on board. But actually, wifey asked me a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, she's like, are you not done being the clown now? Like, it's been long enough. Like, you've done this long enough. Can the younger guys maybe take over a little bit? But, you know, it's part of my personality. You know, I love having fun still. But once I'm done, I'm not going to come back for some videos. So I think it's time for other guys to take over their role. And I'm sure Luca is great for it. He loves having fun off the court as well. He's a little crazy, so I think it's time for somebody else to do it.
Let's do a couple more rapid fire ones. I mean, this is Dirk Nowitzki. I'm not going to get
hot
you
in here.
What does the world not know about the experience of carrying your country's flag in the Olympics, which you got to do?
The most amazing experience was so you're standing. They give you the flag. First of all, you wait in the back for like hours.
I bet it's got to be just a.
Sure. You're actually in some other stadium, and you're waiting. And so we went in for the Chinese alphabet. So Germany was actually not at the beginning. We were almost dead last. So we were waiting literally for 3-4 hours in that stadium, just sitting there playing dumb games where we're hitting each other. And then the next guys, because we were literally with nothing to do.
Yeah.
And so finally we come down and you get through this tunnel, and in the tunnel they give you the flag.
I was I'm picturing you sitting there for 4 hours holding a big German flag.
Yeah, it's no, not, it's not what's no, happening. You get it later. You get it later. You get it later once you go down closer to the stadium. So at some point our federation is really large and we had a few hundred people. So there was a moment where basically the whole tunnel was just us Germans. And I have the flag in the front. I'm fired up. I'm looking forward to about to walk in, and then the entire federation starts singing, "Dirk, show me the flag," and it's
German.
It's a German song, obviously. And I remember turning around, and the whole federation is singing it, and I'm just turning around, and I'm waving the flag over them, and I mean, it still gives me goosebumps to this day, even more than the actual round does, which was an incredibly honored to lead your nation out into the stadium. But that moment in the tunnel, I'll never forget, and it still gives me goosebumps. And it was an incredible experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about this until I started doing a little research for this. Tell people why you are number 41.
Yeah, so I was always 14. Actually, so I started my handball career when I was 11. My dad always had 11. Then when I started playing basketball, I took 11 because of my dad. And then 92, actually, Charles Barkley had 14 in the Olympics in Barcelona. So I love Charles, and he was a little crazy. I love watching him with the intensity he played with. So then I switched over to number 14, and you know, back in the days in Europe, we only had 4 through 15. We didn't have random numbers, so I chose 14, and then I played my whole career there in Germany and national team always with 14. And when I came over, I wanted 14, but Robert Pack had it at the time, and he's like, "Get out of here, Rook! You're not taking my number." He didn't want to shoot for it. He didn't want to play for it.
I wouldn't even give you a shot.
No. You know, because I was
you would have won
because I was a rookie. Obviously, no. Robert was actually so explosive back in the days. He was a good player for us, and so I decided to flip the numbers to make 41 out of 14, and then I think a year or 2 years later, Robert left, and then I had a chance to switch back. But at this point, you know, it was already established, Dirk 41, and, you know, I didn't want to flip back. And then actually Eddie Nahara ended up taking 14 for a couple of years. So it was just too late at this point, but 41 sounded good, and it stuck.
Maybe the most famous shot you ever made was the and one against the Spurs in the 06 playoffs to send the game whatever into overtime. I don't remember which game, six,
game
I
seven.
Think. Game seven,
yeah.
When Ginobili fouls you. Now, I wrote a big profile of Manu 2 years ago, and I talked to a lot of people on that team, and they said, we cannot exaggerate how deep of a depression Manu went in because he felt like he cost him the game, but he felt like he cost some of his older teammates, including Michael Finley, a chance to win the championship. What do you remember of that shot?
So, game six, we were kind of the same scenario. It was at home. They were up three. And I think I was somewhere stuck in the corner, and I hoisted up a bad three, and it didn't go in, and that was basically the game. They made free throws, and the game was over. So we talked about it, and Avery was like, "You got to drive the ball, and you know, you got to put pressure on the defense in that situation, and anything can happen." So that's really all I had in mind when we called that play. I was coming up to the elbow for an open shot, actually, but Bruce was right on me, so I had no shot to shoot that one. So all I had in my mind was like, you got to take the ball strong and see what happens. So I kind of ripped through. He played it and then posted him up, went to the middle. I was like, yeah, I'm going to just try to dunk it and make it a one-point game, foul him, hoping somebody might miss a free throw and we get another shot at it or we get a three later. And that's all I remembered. And then I was actually shocked. He completely left the corner. If I look at the video now, Stack was wide open in the corner. It's a good thing I'm not a great passer because everybody else would have probably seen a wide open guy for three. But I was so focused on the rim, and I went up, and he ended up grabbing my wrist, and somehow, you know, the ball rolled in, and that's how we went Well, then they had the last shot, and we kind of – the ball fumbled around. Timmy had almost a tip in, but then it went to overtime, and then we ended up stealing that game.
And that's an all-time playoff series. I mean, just in terms of quality of play, they changed the rules because you guys met a round earlier than you should have, or a round too early for how great those teams were. But that was in – but that was appointment television, that
yeah,
series.
Yeah, people always ask me, what's your best playoff series? And everybody always wants to talk about 11, but I think that series was my best series overall that I've ever played in my life, just every night against the best. And it was so much fun to play against, you know, Pop System and their players. And I'll never forget that series. And it's just too bad that we couldn't, you know, get that championship.
Yeah, some stuff happened against the Heat. It's too bad the yada, 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 the Heat series happened. It's just like the best
way to... Yeah, because I think we deserved it that year. We went through a lot, and obviously we had to still beat Phoenix in the Western Conference Finals, who was a complete different series than the Spurs. It was crazy up and down and so much fun.
That was the year Amari was hurt, I believe, for them, right? That was the year. They had a brutal playoff run that whole series. I think Amari was hurt
that
year.
I can't remember anymore.
Diaw emerged as a real player. I mean, he was already a real player, but Diaw, that was like peak Boris Diaw. Sort of skinny, almost skinny, in relative terms.
I wouldn't
terms.
Go there. But.
Boris Diaw. Do you have the 2007 MVP trophy?
I do have it. My mom has it. Okay. So I actually have the 2011 finals one I have at home, and my mom has the 07 real one, the regular season one. So, yeah, my mom is great. She always wanted to keep everything. I mean, she saved every newspaper article from the last 21 years, and she's just super proud. My number one fan. And so when I didn't carry that trophy. It was so big. So we shipped it to her after I got it. And I'm still standing right there for her to look at every day.
See, I thought there was going to be like – you sent it back to the league office or something like that. Because there's a legend that I don't think is true that you threw the Western Conference championship trophy in the trash can in 2011 because the championship was all that mattered. But that never happened. That's like an urban legend.
I didn't throw it in the trash.
You just handed it to somebody else.
Yeah, I basically said, we got one of those already. That's not why we're here. So the story was that we won the Western Conference Finals against OKC. And I did a live interview for the TV with Doris Burke. I was done, and then we got the trophy, and I held it up, and the fans were fired up, and then I walked off. I walked off right after we got the trophy. I walked to the back and walked to the locker room because I figured that was it. Only later then did I find out that Doris was looking for me. She wanted to interview me for the fans with obviously
in the arena.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought I already did my interview and I was done. Otherwise I would have stayed. I love Doris. I love her work. Big fan. So I didn't mean no disrespect there at all. I literally thought that the presentation was over. I had the trophy. We took the picture. I handed it to my teammates and I had left. So then Doris is basically standing there and she's like, okay. And here's Dirk. And she's looking for me, and I'm already gone. I was already in the locker room, so I felt really bad after. And then the team, I guess, followed me and thought the presentation was over as well. So there was nobody to interview, and that ended up being a bad look, I think. But people were just
not even Cubans out there to get to take the interview. Nobody.
Oh, he's usually the first one in line to get an interview, but I'm not sure if he was there for that. And so I felt bad afterwards. I mean, it wasn't like I wanted to set an example like this is, you know, we want the final trophy. This is not what we wanted. If I would have known that she was looking for me, I would have been there, obviously. So that was a bit embarrassing after. You know, I obviously respect how much work you have to put in just to even get to the Western Conference Finals or be the Western Conference champs. It's not like I threw a trophy away. But yeah, that's not what we wanted that year. We wanted the whole thing and it ended up working out.
Well, you got it. And now here we are. What, did you just turn 41? 40?
40. I turned 40 this summer. I'm about to turn 41 this summer. Yeah.
And you're still cranking away in the NBA. You got your championship, you got your MVP, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, whatever 3 years is after you retire. Do you just sort of sometimes sit back, especially when I was watching the Knicks game the other night, and you're playing, I mean, they are a baby team. I mean, like a team of babies. And it's like, this dude is, whoever it is, whether it's Mitchell Robinson or Kadeem Allen, is guarding Dirk Nowitzki on a switch. Is like they're literally 20 years younger than you. It's in the, you and Vince, what you're doing is insane. You still like it though, and like, do you ever have time to sort of reflect on like, it's literally been 21 seasons. It's it, for one team. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy how fast the time has flown by, you know. I think I'm going to have more time to really reflect once it's done and I'm a few years removed, and I'll maybe show my kids once they're old enough. But as of now, I'm still grinding. Is it still fun? Yeah, the games are fun when you make a shot or, you know, and you help your team in a certain situation. Sometimes the practices are, I get in a bit much, I think, because people don't see the stuff you still have to do to sort of play at a high level. You know, all the stretching, all the physical work you need on your body, the treatment. You know, sometimes I get 2 hours of treatment a day, and kids, like this summer I was doing rehab and I was laying. Guys would come in at like, I would get there at 9:00, they would get there at like 10:00. They're done at like 11 with their workout on the court. I haven't even left the training room yet. So I'm laying there from 9 to 11 working on different things. And they're just shaking their heads. They're foam rolling for like a minute and then they're working out. And I'm literally in the training room for 2 hours. So some of that stuff is getting tougher and it's getting a little old. The all around the weightlifting, the all the stuff you have to do to keep your body strong and sort of still movable. If I want to say, but, the games will always be fun when the crowd is there and you make a shot and obviously I've been getting a lot of love at home and on the road, which is super sweet and super appreciated and super emotional at times. So that'll never get old.
Well, you could also take over, what does Holger call it? His Institute of Applied Nonsense or something like that. You could take that over if you want.
Yeah. I think I'm going to pass on that. That's, nobody is another Holger. He's one of a kind, and now he's getting older. He's about 73, 74. He's actually here.
I saw him in New York,
yeah,
too. Yeah,
he's here. He just got here. He usually comes a couple of weeks before the All-Star game and looks, and we work together a little bit. So he's still going strong, even though he's getting older, but he's getting definitely weirder at his old age. But it's still good to see him. I mean, we've been through a lot in our career. I mean, I'm known now for almost 25 years, and he's been a big part of my career.
Listen, you got an off day in Cleveland. You got things to do. I appreciate you making any time, and I know I speak for all NBA fans except the crazy ones who don't like you for some reason, which is probably like five guys in the whole world. Like, whatever we got left of you, we're going to enjoy it. And just, you know, it's been awesome watching you for all these years. It's awesome to sit down and reflect on the career. So congrats on everything, and enjoy catching Wilt. How about that?
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for everything.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.